Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
And the interview I'm having today is a very, very special one for me because it's about a courageous journey. Now, not only is that the title of the book, but it is about the real life experiences of two little boys, they are young men today, and a woman who formed a team to put the story out in written form so that the world would be able to hear a parcel of truth that was lived and experienced in our modern world. I want to welcome to the show Barbara Yori. I want to welcome Benny Ngoa-Chol and also Ayulik Deng. Thank you so much for coming and joining me on the air today. And Barbara, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Barbara, I'm going to start with you, and I know Benny and Ayul are listening very carefully because they're both sharing the same phone line. Barbara, this story is walking what's called the Lost Boys Path from Sudan to America. These two young men, when they were little boys, had experiences that we wouldn't wish on anyone. They were in the Sudan. I just went through it, and I was astonished at what they were able to survive. And you give so much good information here. How did the three of you come together? How did you meet Benny and Ayul?
Well, like the rest of Americans, I knew nothing about the civil war in Sudan. It was totally out of our media at the time. And I had started going to a new church and hardly knew anyone but wanted to get involved. And they announced from the pulpit that there were some young men from Sudan who had come over on a special program and really didn't give much background, but they said they needed some mentors to help them adjust to American ways. And I love diversity. I love other cultures, and I thought that sounded interesting. They said, you know, just for 3 months. Well, of course, we know that that lasted a lot longer. But I went with another lady who had met with them before and met 9 of them who were living in a house together. And Iwell had just been here for 2 weeks. This was August of 2001. So that was our first encounter. And then it just grew from that.
Barbara, when you were putting this book together and these young men were telling you their stories, I'm sure that I know how I felt when I was reading this. It just tore at my heart. Your writing and the way you've been able to tell their story is just incredible. But something I want my listeners to know that they may not be aware of is that over 2 million Sudanese have been killed in this war, and that thousands more that we will never know about have been tortured and even sold into slavery. We're talking about in our modern times. And this
right.
is something that a lot of people have a very difficult time wrapping their minds around, because we all are aware, those of us that are in America, are aware of our own history and the various aspects of history that went on here. And that wasn't all that long ago when you really get down to the basics. When you were putting this together and these two young men were saying to you, we want the world to hear, to the best of the capacity that we have, the truth as we knew it and we experienced it. And they want to do what they can to be able to help the people that are in the Sudan. They would like to be able to do it. And I want to give some information about them. Ayulik Ding has completed his AAS degree in paralegal technology from Penn Valley Community College in Kansas City, Missouri. He's working towards a BS in political science from Avila University in Kansas City, Missouri. He lives in Kansas City. Benny Nagarchol was the community-based rehabilitation program manager trainer for the Internal Rescue Committee in Africa, and he's completed an AS degree from Penn Valley Community College and is studying for his BA at the University of Missouri in Kansas City. These are two young men that are earnestly going towards, and perhaps they're very close to finishing their next degree that they're working on. But these are people that feel so responsible about making this world a better place. Benny, I'd like to ask you a question. Are you with me?
Yep.
Benny, when you started putting this book together with Barbara, was it difficult for you to tell her the stories that are shared in this book?
Yeah, actually, at some point when there was a time that sometimes you stop a minute and think about the past experiences and the law that you have encountered, sometimes it's kind of difficult of speaking those painful words out, but at some time you felt that whatever you hear to the people, it is part of the solution, and it's part of sharing the burden to others.
Ayul, I'd like to ask you a question, because in the book, both of you young men, as Barbara wrote about you, have such a deep passion for life, and you have seen so much ugliness. I have nothing but the deepest respect and admiration that you are not working from a positioning of hate. You are working from a positioning that we have to educate people. And in the book, it is written that there was an Arab Islamic government that had declared jihad against the black Christian and animist South, and that radical Muslims intended to enforce their harsh Shahara laws, deny religious freedom, and obliterate the villages over newly discovered oil field. There's so much just in that little space of verbal information that speaks volumes. And we're going through this right now. Being in America, being in the environment where you're getting an education, Ayul, you are such a compassionate man. How is it that you feel you're going to be able to take what you've learned and be able to share it with people that are in the Sudan to give them hope?
Yes, I believe education is the key for life, to save the life of innocent people, to protect people that don't know what they're dying for. When I was a child, there's a spirit of getting education, and education can change life of people, become part of my life. So when I came to America, I struggled, and I have a dream that I should go to school and get education. And that's why I was majoring in a political science, and I take it as a career, because with that, you will work with the government, and you can serve people, and you can be a leader to lead people. So with the education that and the qualification that I've gained in America, if I go back today to Sudan, because I'm already a U.S. citizen, I cannot engage in a government policy because it would not allow me. But I can work in non-governmental organizations that can help, and I can educate people to go to school. If I have a power, we need to educate everybody in Sudan so they can have the knowledge and they can know what they're, you know, affecting their country. I believe with mutual understanding, people can come together. And that's why, that's the only thing that I can give to my people, to educate them and to preach out peace is better than war, because we have lost over 2 million people. But if these people were very educated, I believe they would have found a solution for their life.
Well, I admire both of you. Now, let's go back, and I realize that some of this raises memories that are not very pleasant, but both of you were quite young when the tragedy of families being butchered and murdered in the middle of the night, things like this. You were 7 years old, and I can imagine that. Well, I can't imagine because I've not lived the experience, so my imagination fills in the blanks, and it's just horrifying to me. You came from what group of people? Were you with the Dukes? Is that how it's pronounced?
Right, Duke. That's where I came from.
And then, Benny, what was the name of your tribal people?
I'm from the areas called Unity State, Atparian, Ngok people.
All right. Now, were either of your tribes and your groups in close proximity to each other?
Yes, both of us are from the south, and both of us are Dinka as well, and both of us are from the same region called Afanal in Sudan.
Okay. Now, this journey, there was a group of you, and you were all little boys. The journey that you took, you had no idea where it was going to take you. And all you knew is that you had to survive. You had in your culture what you called age mates. And that's quite a special term. Is that common among all the tribes there in that area?
Yes, actually, particularly in the southern Sudan, between the Dinkas and the Nuer and other tribes within the south. Age mate is very important. This is the way you can measure your ability and also show the strength that wherever your age mate is going to do, you can say, why not me too? So if your age mate can survive the hunger and then the thirsty, then why not me? So I think that's a part of the strength, and I think also a part of the power that keep you moving.
Barbara, I'm going to come back to you for just a moment because it obviously you were helping them to get their story out. You write about the death march. He just talked about the age mates, and in his group there were a few girls and there were a couple of adult women, and they got together sort of tried to stay as a cohesive force to survive. And the death march, that's how I described it, began.
Uh-huh, walking across Sudan.
I mean, that was just, and the things that they saw. When you were writing these things out, did any part of your mind say, how can human beings treat other human beings like this?
Oh, so many times. And you were asking them about the emotion, you know, in telling the story. Actually, they both told me a horrendous story right off. And then after that, it was just facts. And it took us about 4 years to really get the emotion in there. And at that point, they told me it was just too difficult to talk about it first.
Mm-hmm.
Then after I moved out of Kansas City, I live in Arkansas now, and I would drive back and forth. I'd go about once a month and interview them, and we would do it for about 2 hours on Friday and 2 hours on Saturday because that's all any of us could take emotionally. It was really heart-wrenching, and some of the things I can't even say out loud anymore that I wrote, because it is just so the horrific.
The reality when they were on, and I'll use the term death march, that's my choice of words because that's really what it was. Both of you young men saw entire villages slaughtered. The people that were on the march, which included you, you were marching because you had to get to a particular location so that you had a chance for survival, because the rampant massacre was just all the way across the line. Of course, you had lions, you had hyenas, there were snakes. When you look at this, and you were telling Barbara about it, when you were relating this, does it ever cross your mind that maybe part of your survival was the fact that you needed to be able to survive it so someone could tell the story?
Yes, I think, you know, when you look for
Okay, Benny, I think there's something with the phone, so I wanted to let you know because your voice was cutting out a little bit. But let me just move on with that, because I do know that you had some very interesting experiences. One was a hippopotamus. I mean, sometimes you'd have animals that you came across that you were able to strip down for food and were able to carry that food. When you were in this journey, how many adults, were there particular adults that helped you along, or were you pretty much on your own? Benny, can you hear me? I think something happened to their phone. Barbara, could you answer that question?
Okay. I forget what the question was. I'm sorry.
Were there many adults?
Oh, adults. Okay. Not very many, because after a period of time, the women, what few women there were, decided they would go back. And so then girls went with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that left only a few girls. And then the second group that was formed, there were 17 children, the oldest 14, and he was their leader, and one girl. And that was a family of 17. And then along the way, some of the southern SPLA soldiers joined them. And so they did have guns, and they shot game when they could find any. But sometimes there was just nothing as they crossed the desert. Okay, good.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you, Don.
Okay.
We just, Barbara was speaking because we thought something had happened to the telephone connection. Barbara.
I know.
Okay, very good. We're back on with you. That's wonderful. Barbara was explaining answering my question, I should say, about the environment of adults, and that some soldiers had come in and were helping when they could find game to shoot game. But there was something I found very interesting, that there was an officer at one point in your story that was standing on a motor vehicle, and you didn't know what kind of motor vehicle it was. Later you learned it was a Jeep. And he said, and I'm quoting from your book, "Tomorrow is a very important day in our lives. A congressman from the United States of America is coming here to visit you. The whole world will then know the terrible things that are happening to the children of Sudan and in the refugee camps here in Ethiopia. They want to help us. It is not right for you to endure this tragedy." How old were you when this occurred, when this information about an American congressman coming over to Ethiopia to see what was really going on, the horrors that had occurred? How old were the two of you at that time?
I was 11 by that time, and I believe Ben was 14 or 13.
What kind of an impact did that have on you? Because here you are. This journey started out when you were 7. You went through the horrific time until you finally were in this encampment. This is said to you, and what did you know about America? I mean, you were in the middle of the Sudan. Did you have any idea what this represented?
By that time, you know, at the age of 11, you don't have knowledge about the world. What you hear sometimes is, the only time you hear about America is when at night, you know, you see a plane in the sky, and mm-hmm. we're pointing it, we call it America. That's American planes. That's the only time we hear about America now. So when the congressman came to Penindo, that was not in Sudan, in Ethiopia. That was the first day that we know it was promising. And I believe his arrival to that time, by that time, is what brought us to America today. Seeing that congressman arrive in Penindo, he has promised a lot of things that, you know, it came with the media coverage. Mm-hmm. And from that time, most of the countries, the Western countries, have knowledge about the refugee camp and start sending out some relief, food, some clothes. Although there were not enough, that's the time we know, you know, the...
Okay, we lost him again with the phone. Yes. He's made a very good point, Barbara, that there was a lot of media. And, of course, often with media, there's a whole bunch of hype. What kind of an impact did that have for the people in the camp? I mean, when I try to put myself into their situation, I probably would think, so what? He's from America. Big deal. What is this? We're starving here. Or we don't know really what to do. We're trying to stay safe. I mean, that would be, and I would think if I were their age at that time, that's how I would be thinking. It would just, it's just like, so what?
Well, I am also amazed by their hopefulness and their positive attitudes. And from what they told me, they were very, very excited to see someone, even though they knew nothing about America or what this meant at the time or what a congressman was. They were excited about it. And someone told them how to, taught them how to say, welcome congressman, which they all shouted when he finally came. And they do not remember who that congressman was, and I was unable to find, you know, through a search who that could have been.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that was the opening of the United Nations and other countries to know what was going on, because as they walked through this death march, as you call it, there were no outside NGOs or United Nations. It was just off the map
mm-hmm.
for several months there. And so this wasn't too long after they got to the first camp in Ethiopia. And, yes, they were, you know, they were still very hungry. And even through all of the time at the refugee camps, all they had was one meal a day of a corn mush, and once in a while some beans and so forth, but they lived pretty sparsely.
Yes, they did. There is a poem here, and please correct me if I mispronounce the name. Kier Chol. It
yes.
was a young boy, and he wrote a poem. And Ayul, you really held this in your heart very, very closely and deeply. And you had memorized it, but you didn't think too much of the words until later. And this was what this young boy had written. I need to be well cared for. I need to be well educated. I am the hope of my people. I am the leader of tomorrow. Tomorrow is my time to be well educated, my time to be a good leader. This became quite an inspiration to you, didn't it, Ayul?
Yes. Yeah, this become is a thing. You know, by that time, I didn't understand what the meaning is, but because it was in my dialogue in Dinka, and I love to sing it all the time. And after I grew up and I know, and I begin to know what his leader is and what that boy was, although he died, you know, I
mm-hmm.
still remember him, you know, and I appreciate the way he presented this song to us and become part of my life. And I believe this song was inspirational and has changed my life a lot.
Yes. Again, the stories that you have in here, I think many people, when they would read it, would say, no, 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 people would not do this to each other. But mankind in all different points of the world has for whatever reasons, often perform this horrible type of thing. And for some reason, the Sudan didn't get very much attention. But there came a moment, and both of you young men expected, as you got older and more information came into the camp, you realized that there was an opportunity, there was a place that you could go to, and that was the United States, where you would have a chance for education. How did you become aware of this opportunity that was going to be given to a few of those of you that were in the camp? How, and each of you can tell your story, Benny, how were you selected for the opportunity to come to the United States?
Yeah, actually, it was designed on an individualized basis, on the individual cases. So after we have been in a refugee life for years and years, so somewhere there are good Samaritans, there are good people, like American people in particular, and American government thought that these young people, that they deserve opportunities, so they should come to America. And each individual, boys, particularly the boys and the girls, have to apply through the case workers, you know, the caretakers, the teachers in the school. So all the form was submitted to UNHCR, United Nations High Commission for the Refugees, and then we have to wait. And they will communicate back to us, and that is how the process came, until we went through all the interview with JBA, with IOM, and by then we pass, and then we get a result through the UNHCR office, and that's how I end up finding my name and finding myself here in this great nation, and particularly in Kansas City, Missouri.
I wanted to ask Ewell what it was like when you found your brother was still alive, Alir.
I was so happy because I didn't know he was alive, and that day when I heard he was somewhere alive, you know, I'm so glad, and I thank God, because it was part of my prayers. I asked God, you know, that he can keep either one of them, because my brother in Canada, I didn't hear him for over 10 years, so, and him, Alir. So when I heard he came and we met, I was so glad because he's alive, and at least, you know, it's good always to see your family member around. Sometimes you can lose your family, but it's always good you have a family, immediate family member that you can see around. So I was so happy.
Your brother is a very, very wise man, and for all of the horrors that he saw, his attitude was not one of revenge. And one of the points I'm going to read directly from the book. In Sudan, the government is run by Nationalist Islamic Front. They're radical. They want to take over the whole world and make everyone follow their rules, have Arabic names, and follow their customs. And there was so much anger, that, and I can't blame anyone for feeling this kind of pain. There's so much anger here, and then what occurred is your brother, after you told him how you felt, you said, we've got to go back, we've got to fight him. Your brother said, we have to resist, but if we do what you suggest, the killing would go on and on. Somehow, we have to break the violence, the continuing violence. And he said, remember what Dr. Garang told us and Panido. The army fights with guns, but our job is to get a good education so someday we can solve the problems of our country. And, you know, your brother's older than you are, and with this kind of wisdom, so many people just want to go out and get revenge. That's the first thing. We've got to, you know, it's an eye for an eye. But your brother says, we do that. We're doing the same thing that the enemy is doing. We've got to handle things differently. And in coming to this country, in continuing to get your education, how, and I know earlier you expressed that you really wanted to be able to help people become educated. What is your next step? You have become a citizen, and it's just wonderful. I think that's just absolutely fabulous that you've become part of this wonderful nation. When in being here, And having survived what you survived, what would you want to say to someone who is listening today about the kind of violence that we're seeing? We're seeing what went on in Sudan, we're seeing it in Pakistan, we're seeing it in Afghanistan. I mean, there's so many points in the world, Indonesia. There's just so much of this that's going on, and so many of the people being affected are not educated. They don't know what else to do. How would you like to see this problem addressed? What do you, and Benny, I'd like for you to give an answer, and Ayul, because you've lived through something that I don't know that I would have been able to make it through. I honestly don't know. I don't think any of us could answer that unless we've lived through it. And I have nothing but, again, a great deal of respect and admiration for your courage and your willingness to be on the show with me today and working with Barbara to get the book done, because I think it's worth its weight in gold. But what would you want to say to people? Benny, you first.
Yeah, actually, my message to people, those who are in pain and those who are in war zone, wherever they are, in different part of the world, I can quote from the Bible that, and I have already mentioned in the book that we have written, there are time for everything, time for war, time for joy, time for peace. Whatever today, it might be a dark day, tomorrow the light comes. If you are faced with difficulties in dilemma of between death and life, hope that tomorrow is next door. Have courage and stand firm and know that different day will come. And I believe that the life story that we went through, born in the war zone and then grow up in the war, it's not a wish that I can wish to the world. I wish if all the leaders of the world, particularly the power nation, should join hands together and make it world a peaceful world for everyone to enjoy, and a place that Almighty God give to every humankind to enjoy and live in peaceful and harmony and joyful.
Ayul, what would you want to say to my listeners?
What I would like to pass up around is I would like the listeners to know that not all the world is peaceful. Some people are dying right now. Some are, you know, being tortured. There's a genocide going on around the world. And only the media cannot pass the message. What I would like the listeners to know is that is for them to use some, you know, nowadays technology is increasing and we can see all these horrible images anywhere. So that they can go to the internet, just log on, type any country that you know there's a war, and you can see all the images, what's going on. And the solution is for the people, if you have a power, you have your words, please pass the message around. Because not all people are listening to the radio today. Just inform your neighbor, your workmate, at your school, wherever you are, educate them that there's some people dying, children that don't know what they're dying for. The best thing they can do, if they can send some relief, for example, if they need education, we need to empower youth, especially in a country that there's a war, so that they can stop and preach and send people that can preach, you know, tell them to stop, you know, killing each other. And that way the world can be at peace at all.
Barbara,
yes.
And you had written this book and put it together. What would you want my listeners to know?
Well, I certainly tried to tell the story of Benny and Ayul, but in a larger sense, it represents so many people around the world, so many children especially, that are growing up in these circumstances. And I think we're rather isolated from that. 95% of our news or more is what's happening right here in the United States, or if it's happening in another country, how we relate to it, and all that's good. But we don't get a very clear picture of what's really going on and how it affects real people. And so I hope that this book would show real people with real feelings and real ambitions and goals and all of these things that are caught in these circumstances in different countries. And then, you know, from that, each individual person has a way to relate to that and decide what they're going to do to help that along. For me, writing the book, I feel, was a contribution. And so I think each person can decide how they relate once they know what's going on.
Well, I am very grateful that I was made aware of this book. I'm very grateful to you, Benny, and to you, Ayul, because I think it has taken a great deal of courage to be able, one, to live through the experience of the Death March and the many years that went on before you were able to come to the United States, and what you have done here since then, which I think is very commendable. And also, Barbara, I want to thank you because of your willingness to spend time with these young men, to put their story to page, and to live with them through their trust in you and being able to bring down so succinctly the details that have been put here. And I want to just take some information out of your book, The Lost Boys. That's what they're called. They're scattered all over the world, and U.S., Australia, Canada, Europe. And what both of these young men, Benny and Ayul, say, wherever we are, we can get our story out. We can educate people, like Ayul and Benny both said. We've already found some who are curious and ask about the Sudan. Let's tell them the horrible things going on in our country, because other countries must help. But you know, what makes the help available is people. That's what it takes. And ignorance, fear, and superstition are the three biggest enemies any of us have at any time in life. And only through a willingness to learn and a willingness to communicate, as it has been expressed by these very fine young men, can we take a positioning of strength. And I think this book, Courageous Journey, Walking the Lost Boys' Path from Sudan to America, is a read that should really be done by every junior high student. Because we need to realize the only security we have in life is how we manage our own lives and our communities, which can then be looked at as the total country, because that is what makes the difference. What are our standards? What do we believe in? And how are we going to be able to walk the walk of reality so that we can empower other people to walk their reality and truth? Benny Leek Ding and Benny Nagore Chol and Barbara Yoree, thank you so much for being my guest today. I really am so pleased that we were all able to get together, and I compliment you all on a job well done, and do keep up the work, please. Getting the word out. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Thank you so much, and for what our foundation to make a difference to the world. The
Thank
Lost
you.
Boys Foundation.
Oh, the Lost Boys Foundation. Is there a website for that? Is it just thelostboys.com?
You can go to SudanPace. It's a blog right now.
It's on my blog, but if you go to the web and just put in www.lostboysfacefoundation.org, it will come up. And that's face, F-A-C-E.
Okay, Lost Boys Face, F like Frank, A-C-E, dot com.
No, Foundation. Lost
Foundation.
Boys, Lost Boys Face Foundation.org.
Facefoundation.org. Well, thank you so much. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Courageous Journey.
Thank you
Walking
so much.
Walking the Lost Boys. You're very, very welcome. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Today, when I had on Barbara and Benny and Ayul, I can't tell you, I don't know that I have the right words to express what I feel about this phenomenal book. Because when one is a counselor like I am, it's not unusual to hear stories of tragedy and things that in your worst nightmares. I mean, in some of the horror movies, maybe they depict it, but you just say, oh, well, that's just a horror movie. Well, there are a lot of people that are living horrors worse than what you see upon the, as they call it, the silver screen. But it's amazing to me how easy it is to put the blinders on and say, it could never happen to me. And I'll never forget someone saying that to me about the United States. Oh, this could never happen in the United States. So we've got history in this country. And when people open up their eyes and they start to really read it, a lot of things happened in this country that were not pretty. They were violent. And it wasn't until there was the conscious mindfulness to say this is not acceptable. And that's what education should do for you. That is what reading, not just listening to a bunch of hype, but taking the time to get together with people, talk about different publications that come out, question things. One of the aspects of life that I think is so very important is to learn how to think. Now, that may sound a little corny, but I really mean it. And believe it or not, it took me a while. I was raised in an environment you weren't supposed to question authority, and what everybody said in the school books, boy, that was right. Well, my goodness, most of what was said in school books that I was brought up with, it's false. It's a lie. But how many times today do we even question that? And how many times today, as adults, do we say, I wonder if this is really true? How do I find out if something is true? To think means that you can examine. You can be very well organized about how to cook scrambled eggs, and that's fine. But what if you have an issue in front of you that involves integrity? What if you have an issue with a situation? Maybe you have someone in your life that's a blatant liar. Do you look at it? Do you ignore it? Or do you speak up about it? And what if you're criticized terribly because you speak up? Do you have the courage to stand true and say, this is what I know? It takes time to learn. And how many times do we stick our heads in the sand? And the reason I feel I can talk about it is because I've been there. And I had an experience many years ago where someone called my attention to something. I had opened my mouth and made some kind of a flippant comment. It was really stupid. that, you know, when you're young, you're stupid, and your mouth just flaps like a WD-40 special. And I'll never forget this person turning to me and saying, you know, it might not be such a good thing that what you have suggested occurs, because what could come after could be very difficult. Now, maybe it didn't sound like much to anybody else, but it really struck at me because I realized how very ignorant I was in so many areas. And I realized, too, how many people around me were ignorant. You know, education is a do-it-yourself job, believe it or not. You must be willing to think and examine. And that's what can make life rich. Here are two young men that despite all the adversity, they could easily have become the king of butchers if they wanted to, but they didn't. They said, we have other options. And they did have people that said, look to other options. And they had the wisdom to listen. And Ayul had an older brother that had figured this out and shared his thoughts with his younger brother. They both had survived horrific stuff. And that's their goal today. They want to make a difference in the right way. So fear is something that we're all going to have in life, but it's what we're going to do with it. And all of us get scared. All of us will quake in our boots. But when you let fear dominate without thinking, you've got pandemonium, chaos, and disaster. Sometimes it's called mob mentality. So where is your mind? And I would hope, whether it's this book, Courageous Journey, A Boy's Walk from the Sudan to America, whether it's that book or another book, think about what you're reading, sometimes in your own mind. Try to put yourself in their footsteps, if you will. It's tough, not easy. Nobody ever said a life was fair. Nobody gives you any guarantees for that either. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your plans are in life. Life is not fair. So it's how you work with your life and with your mind that makes all the difference in the world. And to educate yourself, to think, to reason, to design, to develop, all of that is a fabulous tip. Now, I want to say, and I know that we could take another break, but I'm not going to do that because we're going to be going just a little bit past the top of the hour. I wanted to share with you some information. Those of you that are in the state of Washington, there is an event coming up tomorrow, and this is in Western Washington especially, called the Emerald Spiral Expo. Not tomorrow, this Saturday, excuse me. And this Saturday, it is going to be absolutely wonderful from 9 to 5 in the morning at Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. A wonderful event that used to be the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. It's now called the Emerald Spiral Expo. It's just a family event. It's a great time to get together with people. If you've had an interest in the psychic area, if you are trying to look at some things maybe for the upcoming holidays that you wanted to buy for friends that were unique, I'm going to be there doing readings for people and also little mini sessions, and I'm also going to have an abundance of books that are going to be at my table, so I welcome you to come by and say hello. But just know it's free. You don't have to pay a thing to come in. This is an event that's been put on for 39 years, and I invite you to join this wonderful group of people that just are as down home and down to earth as you could possibly want people to be, and they love to chat, love to share, and it's a fabulous, fabulous way to spend a rainy Saturday, which we're going to have here in the Pacific Northwest. So look them up, emeraldspiral.com. It's again Kent Commons in Kent, Washington, this Saturday, from 9 until 5, and I hope to see you there. Also, there's another event coming up. It's an evening of mediumship. Now, this is being held in Tacoma, Washington, and Michael Shane is going to be a medium that is going to be performing there. This is a transphysical phenomena demonstration that he's going to be giving. Now, this is not something that's done very often by people. It takes a lot of physical strength and stamina. Michael is a very fine man. I've had the opportunity to chat with him, and we're going to even interview him on the show next month before this event. Now, it's being held Thursday, October the 7th from 7 until 9. So if you'd like some information, this is going to be at the Blue Mouse Theater in Tacoma, and that's at 2611 North Proctor Street. If you want more information, call 253-503-3773. They'll give you all the details on the event. Tickets will be available at the door. So it's 253-503-3773, and there are going to be some other mediums and persons demonstrating various skills and abilities. So it's going to be a fascinating evening here in Tacoma, Washington, and you are invited. So check it out, 253-503-3773, an evening of mediumship, October the 7th. Oh, and don't forget, those of you that have stories, I just got some more, of paranormal experiences, please send them to me via email. The cutoff date for the stories is January the 1st of 2011. So please get them in to me, and we're putting them all in a file, and we're going to be arranging things after the first of the year to get them off to a publishing house. So I'd love to have your stories, and just send them to me. Be sure to put in the subject line, story for Donna's book, or the equivalent thereof, and I would be delighted to put that in my file. Include your contact information, please, because we will need to have that. Okay, on the lighter side, I know so many of you, when it starts getting darker outside and the temps are getting colder, maybe you'd like to do something to brighten up your environment. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we typically have the gray skies. In fact, it's raining right now. That's just the MO of the Pacific Northwest. During the summer, we sing Perry Como's song of the blue skies of Seattle. Well, right now, they're non-existent. So that's no big surprise. But what if you really want to perk up your environment? Well, of course, color is one of the best things that you can use. And also, don't forget the full spectrum lighting in your home. There are bulbs that you can get that are energy efficient. They brighten up the home. And it isn't until November the 7th that we're going to be coming off of daylight savings time. But regardless, with or without that time change, the days are getting shorter all by themselves. Just seems to happen naturally. So check around. And if you're feeling like you're going to need a lift during the long winter months ahead, well, think about your color. Also, realize that maybe what you might need to do, if you're on a limited budget, maybe what you need to do is put something with brighter colors down on the floor. Of course, if you have two Scottish Terriers like I do, and they have the tendency to bring in half of the backyard mud in every time they come into the house, that may not be especially what you want. But you may not have to contend with that, so maybe you want to have something colorful that is going to brighten up your space. So if you've got dowdy, drab things around you, why don't you perk them up with some color and feel good about the environment that you're in. And don't forget that full spectrum lighting. It really makes a difference. I know when I'm up at 5:30 in the morning and I'm reviewing materials, I've used that kind of lighting now for years, and my eyes don't get fatigued, and it just makes all the difference in the world. The light does make a difference because it simulates the full spectrum lighting that you get out in natural sunshine. So be sure and check it out at your local box store, wherever that may be, and, you know, any of your local hardware stores, and see what they can tell you about it. Check it out on the web, and you'll find that there's really a good benefit to that. And then you don't have to go through the winter doldrums. It won't affect you in the same way. Donna Sebo here, and I do want to let those of you who are listening from New York City, I'm going to be in New York City in the latter part of October, and I will be available for a very short period of time for meeting people one-on-one for private consultations. So I do want to give that information out. For those of you in Alaska, I'm going to be in Alaska from the 12th of October until the 18th of October on a business trip, and I will be available for private counseling then. So either of you in New York City or in Fairbanks or Anchorage, Alaska, just give me a call at my office and I can give you more details about where I'm going to be and how you can meet with me if you so desire. And my office number is 800-872-8852. Well, I'm out of time. We've got a great lineup tomorrow, so don't forget to join us because I know you'll have a good time. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day or evening, and be aware you're blessed beyond your wildest imaginings. Take care of those blessings. Take care of yourself. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.